It's my task today to provide the fourth of our six sermon series exploring Ecclesiastes, this short, strange book of wisdom in the Hebrew Scriptures. As we've learned, it contains the teachings of one named Qohelet, who is sharing his insights with the Ecclesia, from which we get Ecclesiastes. And Ecclesia is the Greek word meaning the gathered or the assembly. That's right, the assembly. Now you know why we, of all congregations, are compelled to spend so much time with this book, our book, our namesake. And it seems to fit us in a variety of ways, does it not? The author is such an enigma, so heady, tends to contradict himself with some regularity. He raises question after question and isn't afraid to stray from orthodox teachings. And periodically he concludes that life is so absurd that we might as well open that bottle of wine and find us some joy. That sounds a lot like the assembly I know. And what is his main point? Recently I listened to an interview of Stephen Colbert, the comedic host of The Late Show, who is also candid about his Christian faith. And in this interview, he recalled one of the first jokes he had ever written, and it had to do with God. An atheist commits suicide and goes to heaven, and God meets him at the pearly gates. The guy is shocked to be in heaven, and God says, "Why do you look so surprised?" "Well, for starters," he says, "I'm an atheist." God says, yeah. You know, people make too much of that. You're a pretty good guy. You can come on in." But I killed myself, and the church says that's a sin. I can't believe I'm going to heaven." God says, "Look, everybody thinks about it. It's perfectly natural. Even I thought about it once or twice." Guy says, "Really? Do you mind if I ask you why you didn't go through with it?" And God says, "Well, what if this is all there is?" It was one of his first jokes. But it immediately struck me as pure Ecclesiastes. What if this is it? This absurd, vaporish life. Qohelet, and apparently God, can't stop ruminating about this. We work hard, toiling under the hot sun. For what? We don't know. None of us can see beyond the veil. But we do know that in the end, we die and are forgotten. So given this harsh reality, do our lives have meaning? This is the type of question seekers of spiritual wisdom zero in on. What are we here for? How shall we live? What is the meaning of life? Yet these questions aren't popular in our culture. In our time and place, we're fed an endless stream of distractions and wisdom suppressing amusements so that we can wander through life mostly asleep and unreflective. Oftentimes, it's not until we're jolted to attention by some seismic event in our personal life that we start to ask these fundamental questions. Qohelet and other wise ones in the Bible urge us to spiritually wake up, to grow a pair of eyes that can see by grappling with life's essential questions. And the specific question we'll deal with today in our examination of Ecclesiastes is, how shall we live given the injustices in the world, the gap between rich and poor, the oppression that exists all around us? How shall we live with that? And what does the wisdom of Qohelet say to us about that? This question has probably been the preeminent one of my life. It's a question that led me to pursue two college degrees, one in religion to explore what God is saying about justice and peace, and one in political science to understand how we pursue it in this world. And it's a driving question that led me to law school, the training ground for many who have made a career of seeking justice. And it's the question that led me as a young lawyer back to the church and the halls of government power as a legislative advocate on Capitol Hill, working for Mennonite Central Committee. And in a weird twist of fate, this question had a good deal to do with me coming to Assembly to work as pastor of peace and justice, among other things. So you may think by now I would have the answer to questions concerning how we should live situated as we are in one of the longest standing white supremacist social orders in the history of the world, or in a world where each day 25,000 people die from hunger and related causes, a number that will only grow as the earth gets hotter. But the truth is, my answers continue to evolve. And I know there's still deeper spiritual wisdom for me to grasp. So let's see what we can learn today by listening to Qohelet while acknowledging up front that his isn't the only biblical voice on this question. The Bible gives us a multiplicity of perspectives. That's the strange gift of the Bible. It houses a passionate debate, a historical argument about what is the path of wisdom and what is mere foolishness. That's why it's a bit of a misnomer to refer to the Bible as a book. It's more like a library of some 70 books, which don't by any means present a single unified perspective. The Bible is a valuable tool, but we still have our work to do. Digging into Ecclesiastes, we find a few places where Qohelet reflects on wealth, poverty and oppression. In chapter 4, he writes, "I have reflected on all the oppression happening under the sun. I've seen the tears of the oppressed and who have no one to comfort them. I see the power of their oppressors who also find no comfort. And I'm led to conclude that the dead, even though they are dead, are more fortunate than the living. And even more fortunate are the unborn, those who have yet to see the evil deeds that are done under the sun." Here, the teacher considers the world around him and is profoundly struck by its unfairness and tragedy. You can hear in his lament echoes of the prophets like Amos, condemning the wealthy cows of Bashan, as he calls them, who oppress the poor, crush the needy, while demanding something good to drink. Later in Ecclesiastes, chapters 5 and 6, we find the longest section on this topic. And here Qohelet reflects on how common oppression of the poor is, on the pervasiveness of greed, and on the vast discontent among the masses. So how shall we then live? It's in chapter 5, verse 20, argues biblical scholar Leon Xiao, that Qohelet gives us his answer. The verse reads, "So enjoy the moment. Embrace whatever comes. Then you needn't brood over the shortness of life, for God will keep our hearts filled with joy." Here we don't so much hear the echoes of Amos or Isaiah, but of a more modern-day prophet, Bobby McFerrin, who teaches, "Don't worry, be happy." What do we make of this advice? Wes Howardbrook, a theology teacher and lawyer, a combination I tend to like, wrote a fascinating book titled Come Out, My People, in which he examines this passionate debate between books in the Bible about how we should structure and live our lives. He describes how some of the books promote what he calls a religion of empire, ones that affirm hierarchy, loyalty to authority, deference to rulers. And some promote a religion of creation, ones that are more grounded in the experience of and the ongoing relationship with the Creator God, and as a result are more egalitarian, more focused on God's abundance and hospitality. And when it comes to Ecclesiastes, Howard Brook finds that it stands somewhere in the middle of this continuum, endorsing neither the royal kingly wisdom nor the more prophetic Exodus creation-based wisdom. But he notes that Qohelet seems to speak for the upper-class elite. He is one who sees injustice and poverty around him, but doesn't particularly involve himself nor offer a vision for a solution. His perspective is like many comfortable intellectuals throughout the ages who have the ability to see how the world really is, but take no risks to improve it. Rather, Qohelet's counsel is simply to enjoy what one can while one can. Still, Howard Brooks says Qohelet's perspective is important for us to hear because it expresses the view of many who reject too much religion on either end of the spectrum, both the religion of right-wing Christians who use God to legitimate an unjust status quo, and the religion of liberation advocates who see God on the side of their revolutionary movements. So when reflecting on injustice, Qohelet fits more easily with those in the middle who have plenty of food and leisure time to sit back and observe the struggle from a safe distance, cynically rejecting the call to enter the fray. This is the mindset of many who are neither particularly invested in the system nor the victims of it. I think any in-depth study of Ecclesiastes has to take this critique seriously. And I, for one, think it has some merit. And yet, at the same time, I am not wholly dismissive of Qohelet's teaching that in the face of life's absurdity and despair, we mustn't get stuck in continual brooding and gloom, but instead seek joy. There is some important wisdom there. And even though Ecclesiastes is referenced at most only once in the New Testament, which, by the way, suggests that this book was not favored by the New Testament prophetic or apocalyptic traditions, there do seem to be some interesting parallels between the wisdom of Qohelet and the wisdom of Jesus. For example, Qohelet says, "Don't be surprised to see oppression of the poor." Jesus says, "The poor, they will always be with you." There seems to be some congruency there. Qohelet says, "There is nothing better under the sun than for people to eat, drink, and be merry." Jesus and the gospel writers say repeatedly that the reign of God is like a party, a banquet, a feast. Certainly that's describing joyful scenes of eating, drinking, and merriment. So are Jesus and Qohelet on the same page about life and how to live it, or not? Anabaptist Christians need to know. Perhaps we can better compare and contrast with a closer look at the context of some of these ancient teachings. For starters, when Jesus remarks that the poor will always be with you, he's responding to some who are angrily accusing a woman with expensive oil, oil she bought to anoint Jesus, that she has misused her wealth and should have given it to the poor. Is Jesus, in dismissing this critique, echoing Qohelet's call for less brooding about the ever-present poor? On the surface, it may seem so. But in this gospel story, Jesus is sitting in the home of an outcast, among a community committed to sharing life with the poor, and in the presence of a woman anticipating his upcoming execution. That's a fairly different scene than we get with Qohelet. Jesus seems to be telling those present that there will continue to be opportunity for his followers to do the right thing in regard to sharing with the poor, but that is not what this moment is about. So he rebuffs those who seemingly were standing in solidarity with the poor, but were actually avoiding the unfolding drama before them. Okay, so it's hard to argue Qohelet and Jesus had similar attitudes towards people living on the margins. But what about joy, the banquets, the feasting, the merriment, which it seems both Qohelet and Jesus commend? I mean, it's obvious Qohelet is all in on joy. But Jesus? Isn't he more in line with those progressive, justice-affirming prophets who want us to stop goofing off and get serious about saving the world? Well, this may depend on what one means by joy, right? Is your joy the kind promoted by the empire? Is it about materialism, luxury, overindulgence, living a life disconnected from and indifferent to those on the margins? I suspect there's little room for that kind of joy in the reign of God. But there is a different kind of joy, one that lives alongside rather than in denial of the world's injustices. And for all its focus on seeking joy, we don't see this particularly spelled out in Ecclesiastes, but it is in the gospel stories of feasting and banquets, which are as much stories about radical inclusion as they are about the joy that God intends for us. When you read them, notice how the foil in these stories is the so-called good people who choose not to come to the party due to their disapproval of the scandalous width and breadth of God's generous welcome. These are stories of joy, but they come connected to God's inclusive justice. We also find joy-affirming teaching in those seemingly ridiculous sayings from Jesus, but we should be like the birds of the air and the lilies of the field who neither toil nor worry. I've always found them a bit embarrassing. They make no sense in the modern world, for we are all about toiling and brooding about tomorrow. And they also make no sense because, as I'm learning, to hear these stories as anything more than a naive dream often requires a kind of spiritual transformation that comes from experiencing the living God. It may be that only then can we sense the freedom of letting go of our endless striving, our desire to control, our ego-satisfying way of moving in the world, all those things that shut down joy. I've been exploring this transformative path to joy for a few years now, and I found it's a path lined with more silence and contemplation than I'm accustomed to. And therefore, it's sometimes mistaken as disengagement and non-involvement with the pain of the world, when in reality, it's a journey to connecting with the eternal well of compassion, which in turn leads one to join the movements to repair the world. Those of us committed to peacemaking do well to find this less aggressive, more generous path toward joy and inner peace, and away from all that leads to polarization and spiritual burnout. So Qohelet isn't wrong. In the face of the pain of the world, we do need to enjoy the moment, to turn from brooding, to experience the joy that God provides. And what I also want him to say is that this joy is not found by disconnecting from the plight of the oppressed, but by actively connecting to the compassionate heart of God, which leads us to speak, live, and act in ways that join in God's healing work. This is the way of justice and joy. And friends, the way of justice and joy may very well be the very meaning of life. Amen.